Hey everyone, Chad Cemetery is back, as is Katie Schaefer. Today we are discussing The Dark Tower, the Wastelands novel, and this is the third book in the series, and it came out in August of 1991. It's a little lengthier, maybe, than Gunslinger, for sure.
For real.
I think it's a little longer than The Drawing of the Three as well.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's, you know, I've got the book in front of me, and I would say it's a good at least a quarter to a half inch bigger than the trade paper, than the smaller trade paperback.
Yeah. So I want to start by talking about how things rolled over from The Drawing of the Three, because obviously with how expansive this series is, you're going to have a lot of continuation happening. And I haven't read the rest of the series yet, so I don't really know how I believe it's the Wind Through the Keyhole plays in, because I know that's kind of like a 4.5, but it came out as the eighth book, or he did something a little weird there. But this one pretty much directly follows The Drawing of the Three. You have Roland and his quartet. I don't really know which way that goes. Quartet. He is accompanied by Eddie and Susanna still. And then we get a lot more of Jake in this novel, which I think is something that kind of upped my enjoyment of this one more over the other two. I liked the role that Jake played in The Gunslinger, and I thought him and Roland had this interesting relationship, and I'm glad they've been able to expand on that so much more with this novel.
Yeah, he feels like an anchor to the storylines in both The Gunslinger and in The Wastelands and continuing books. I've read two-thirds of the way through The Wizards in Glass and will continue on after this. But I think that Jake works so well in this book because we get so much from his perspective in our world. So it gives us a place as readers who live in this world to grab onto the story and really get invested in it, especially once Jake gets, you know, pulled in to Midworld. So I think that King does a masterful job of giving us a real look into who Jake is, which we don't get a lot of in The Gunslinger. We get a lot of, you know, Jake's actions, but not his history and how what his home life is like and how he interacts with our regular society. And it makes Jake such a more well-rounded character in The Wastelands because of that.
Yeah, and The Wastelands in general is just such a great setting for this novel, and I think it really amplifies these relationships between all of the characters, even though Eddie and Susanna might not know Jake that well, because he is kind of doing his own thing at the beginning, but he knows that it serves a purpose. He just doesn't know exactly what that purpose is yet, and Stephen King has a knack for writing kids in a way that makes them understand things that adults either can't understand or they've just grown out of being able to understand.
Right, right. And he does that really well with Jake because it feels like Jake doesn't really grasp the nuance of why he's doing what he's doing until as he gets closer and closer to his goal, more and more is revealed to him. Yeah. But in the beginning, he's acting very much on instinct and interacting with his day-to-day life with a coked out dad and absent mother and a difficult school life and all of those things. But yet he's so practical. He's very much the person we see in the Gunslinger because he is so practical and so like, well, this is not working. I am not going to do this anymore. I am going to go on my own path and do this thing, even though for most people, it would seem like that's a crazy thing to do.
Right. I do want to talk a little bit about the villains in this, too, because there are a lot of interesting things that Stephen King did in this one. You know, Blaine the Mono is literally a monorail that is going crazy. And yes, just to have this inanimate object, I mean, it moves, yes, because it's a machine, but this inhuman monorail be this big bad villain and sort of just have this overbearing voice from what you can tell, because every time Blaine talks, it's in all caps in the book.
Yes. And it's his contributions, even though like we don't really get a lot of Blaine until Wizards in Glass, like just that little bit of him in The Wastelands is so intriguing because he feels very strong as a villain. Like if he were a character in a video, like a boss in a video game, he would be very close to the end.
Yeah.
This is a character that we know is going to challenge our protagonists, and they might not win because this is Stephen King, or they might not all make it out alive. And I love how the other bad guys, like from Gasher to the TikTok man, is each a step up.
Yeah.
In scary. And then they get to Blaine, and Blaine is both their savior and their, you know, and maybe their doom.
Yeah.
And the whole world of the Wastelands and this terrible city they go into, it has so much atmosphere that even the city feels like a villain, like it's working against the protagonists in this.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you have the fact that Stephen King makes the monorail suicidal. So you can tell there's this sort of commentary going on underneath with this character. It's like, yes, Blaine is a monorail, but there's obviously something else that Stephen King is trying to get across here. And if Blaine commits suicide, he kind of takes everyone with him. And it really just felt like that was sort of a metaphor for, you know, this kind of one destructive person within a group of people that if they self-destruct, they're kind of going to take everyone else with them. And I really liked how he handled that, because it takes a while to sort of get that information out of Blaine. They're kind of playing these games back and forth with each other until Roland gets really mad. And it's like, you know what? Here's how it's going to be. And he's the only one who was really able to stand up to Blaine in that kind of way. And even, you know, you had Jake kind of muttering and saying things quietly to himself about Blaine. And you could tell that Jake knew something that maybe the others weren't picking up on.
Right. He has this almost foreknowledge of what's coming.
Yeah.
And how that, his foreknowledge, interacts with Roland, who is a force to be reckoned with in every book. But in this one, by the time we get to Blaine, he is so enraged and frustrated and hurt by everything that's happened that he feels even more terrifying, even for a creature like Blaine, who, you know, is an inanimate object, supposedly. And so they have, it's almost like a good cop, bad cop situation where you have Jake, you know, being the sneaky one, and Roland is battering Blaine with his forcible personality. And the two then lead to them, the group, the whole group being able to escape the situation. Well, also maybe risking death.
Just a little bit, maybe.
You know, perhaps. I do not regret the fact that you and I are reading these books now as opposed to when they were coming out.
Yeah.
Where this ends and then you have to wait years and years to find out what Blaine is going to do.
Yeah, that would really suck. And I mean, it'll still be a while before I get to the next book, because if I'm not mistaken, there was quite a big gap between this one.
Yes.
And Wizard in Glass. And then you have, obviously, Wind Through the Keyhole came out semi-recently. So you have this long period of time that these books are being released. And man, that must have been pretty sucky as a fan to be like, oh,
right?
My goodness, 10 years later, finally.
And then you have to wait, after Wizards in Glass, you wait another 10 years for the conclusion of the series. But I think he does it really well, because having read the beginning of Wizards in Glass, it feels very of a piece.
Right.
So he does a great job in this, setting up a situation that feels incredibly perilous and like tense. Even as a reader, where you're laying in bed or sitting on your couch or whatever, and you're reading a book, and you're just gripping the book so hard because it's so, you know, upsetting to think about what's going to happen, because there's so many options. And with this author, you don't know what he's going to do.
Right. I also feel like there were a lot more important characters in this compared to both The Gunslinger and The Drawing of the Three, because obviously The Drawing of the Three is meant to introduce us to Eddie, Susanna, Odetta, Detta, you know, whatever you want to call her, all of the above. And in this, you get a bunch of villains who play crucial roles and stick around for quite a while. And you also have the Billy Bumbler, Oi, who ends up joining the gang and is really attached to Jake, which I thought was very interesting because from what I could tell, I don't think Jake had, you know, any sort of siblings or pets or, you know, sort of someone to look after.
Right. It feels almost parental the way he latches on to Oi, or like we got a dog, I don't know, like 8 months ago for Christmas. And my son, who's 11, had the same kind of reaction where this is his dog and he's about taking care of her and is very sympathetic with her and talks to her all the time. And it's the same kind of thing where you get a pet and you just bond with it. And that is very accurately represented with Oi and Jake.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I would just love me a stuffed Oi. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and I think the inclusion of all of these newer characters helps story-wise because, like the gunslinger, this is a long journey. You know, they're going from point A to point B to point C throughout this entire book, and they have these obstacles along the way, like Roland did before in the gunslinger. So you have to change things up enough to not get bored with that kind of journey storytelling. And I think Stephen King does a great job of doing that with this one because he introduces enough new characters to where you're like, oh, okay, what's going to happen when they meet this one now? You know, what's going to happen with Jake and Gasher? So you're invested because you care about the characters from the drawing of the three. And then you get a lot more of Jake, who is this kid that you're sort of naturally rooting for because the kids are always pretty innocent the way that Stephen King writes them. And I really liked how that also allowed the pacing of the story to go by pretty quickly. There were some, you know, lulls here and there, and I would kind of lose my focus while I was reading the book. But I've also been stressed a lot lately with moving and everything, and I'm moving again and sleeping on a couch. So it's one of those things where, you know, maybe I would have caught on to some more details had I sort of just been in a permanent spot and been able to just read this in, you know, 3-4 days or something, you know, crank it out. But this one did take me a while to get through. And I don't think it's the fault of the pacing. I think it was actually paced very well. I think it was just my circumstances. And sometimes that can really take you out of a book. So once I got some momentum going and kind of finished the last third of the book, I would say, I was really invested in everything that was going on.
Yeah, the same thing happened with me. It's a long hill to climb. It's almost kind of like a roller coaster with this book, which is a thing people say about books. But this one, it feels very accurate. There's lots of setting and story placement and setup in general for what these characters are going to go through. And then in the last act, the last third of the book, everything hits the ground and it all happens at once. Everybody, you know, big emotional scenes happen, big violence happens, everything is over the top, but in a totally understandable and appropriate way for a story that has these kinds of stakes, because the stakes are incredibly high in this book. This is not, like in most Stephen King books, this is not something where if one little thing goes wrong, it'll be okay. You know, these people are under dire situations. And I think, like you said, there's so many background characters and side characters that really come into their own here. But Susanna and Eddie also become so much more complex and take on such a different role, especially Susanna from the drawing of the three. Like, she grows so much as a character. And by the end of it, they've done all this growth and you are just so invested in making sure that everybody makes it out alive. Because I remember that's what I felt. You know, you look at the clock and like, oh, crap, it's 11 and I have to go to work in the morning. Another chapter. I better just read another chapter just so I know.
Just one more.
You know, it's, yeah, just one more. Books are the ultimate just one more. And this one falls into that where once you reach that climactic point, like, you better just hope that it hits you at the point where you can sit down for a couple hours and just plow right through it.
Exactly. And I'm glad that you brought up, you know, the characters becoming more complex. And that wouldn't have happened if we didn't meet them the way that we did in the drawing of the three. They had a lot of room for personal growth. And I think that's something that made this book more exciting. You know, the two of them are a couple now, and Susanna has to go on and do, you know, some horrible things with the demon. And
oh, so bad.
It was one of those scenes that is painful to read, but at the same time, Susanna is shown as this powerful character. So
right.
You're obviously rooting for her and you're like, yes, destroy the demon. It's really weird that you have to do it that way, but yes.
Right, exactly. And I think at the end of the drawing of the three, both of them feel like almost blank slates, like they've overcome their difficulties. You know, Eddie has now sober and dealt with his addictions and is ready to move on as a human being. And Susanna has found a way to bring herself together, and they've formed a relationship and a bond, and they've found a way to connect with Roland. And so now they're ready to like become more than what they were before. And that's what happens in the Wastelands. And in particular, that scene with Susanna, because it's, you know, it's a rape scene. There's an intense sexual interaction in this book that is... Stephen King does sex, and some people will... It'll work for some, and it won't for others. That's just how it is. And it generally works for me. And I thought that this scene feels like a powerful display of her taking ownership of her sexuality, of her power, and her ability to dominate the forces of the darkness with herself. And I think it works, but it definitely will not work for everyone.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, you have moments like that in it where I think, you know, that
yes,
one scene in particular, I don't think it really works for anyone, actually, not anyone I know anyway. And
I feel like it's something that I remember reading and being like, oh, okay. I mean, I guess I see why you put this in there, but couldn't you have picked something else?
Yeah.
That was kind of my thought. Sounded like she could have just kissed them all or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't need to go there.
They're like 12.
Didn't need to
come
go
on.
There. Right. I remember who I was at 12, and I remember thinking how I would have felt about that. And I feel like, no, not even in the 50s, bro.
But you have these scenes that can be basically talked about as controversial. And I don't think this one is nearly as controversial as that one, mostly because obviously Susanna is making a choice. She's like,
and Susanna's an adult.
Yes. Also that very important distinction there. But Roland kind of tells her how it's going to be, and it's going to come down to the one of the two of them. And it happens to be her. And she's like, okay, I don't really want to do this, but for the greater good, I am going to do this. And there is a reasoning behind her deciding to do that, because she's like, okay, if I don't, this is going to end very badly for all of us.
Right. And she knows that. It's not just a sense. It's not what Roland's told her. She knows that, like, to her bones. And I think the fact that Roland is just as willing to take the sacrifice of doing that is very important for how you take the scene. This isn't just necessarily Susanna's sacrifice. It could be his. And Eddie also has a part to contribute to that scene. And it's important that it is a thing that they all do together, that they are a quartet, that it is a challenge they face and overcome, and that Susanna uses her own special abilities, I guess, to find a way to triumph in that moment, even though it's a horrific moment, and overcome the challenges that they're facing and complete the task.
Yeah, you have a lot of life or death situations in this. And I specifically want to talk about the ending here real quick, because while there are a lot of things we can mention about everything in between, I think the ending...
Oh, so many.
I think the ending is really what stands out, because it comes down to riddles of all things. I almost felt like I was reading a novelization of a Batman comic. I was like, is the Riddler going to pop up anytime soon? And I don't mean that in a bad way, because I really enjoy Batman and the Riddler. So I was just kind of like, oh man, that's super risky to have your life depending on how good of a riddle you can come up with. And
for me, it felt like something out of The Hobbit.
Okay.
It's the same thing. Exactly. Like, you're placing a lot of risk here, my dude. Are you sure this is how you want to go? But they just have no options.
Yeah, and there's so much tension between Eddie and Susanna and Blaine at first, because they're the ones who set out to go find Blaine, and they have no idea what to expect either. So they're going one way, and Roland is going off on his own to find Jake. I mean, he has Oi with him, but how much good Oi is going to do, that's debatable. He kind of just calls out for Jake every now and then and doesn't really totally grasp what's going on because, again, he is Oi and, you know, not really going to get a lot out of him intellect-wise because he is a...
A Billy Bumbler.
Billy Bumbler, yes. I don't really know what that is, but it's a thing.
I always thought of it was like a lemur with a sharp claw, like a raptor claw, like in Jurassic Park. That was my image of it, is a lemur.
Interesting. He kind of looks like a zebra cat.
Yeah.
Zebra fox, kind of.
It's fun because it's a character that everybody can picture on their own. Like, I went and looked at the Wikipedia before we did this, and he's described very interestingly, and I thought, I don't know if that's how I would describe him. Okay, but whatever. Yeah. And I think it was like a cat, raccoon, a combination of a badger, raccoon, and a dog with a parrot-like speaking ability. It's like...
Maybe throw a little fox in there.
That's a lot of things that don't go together, my friend.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to pretend Oi is a dog this entire time because that'll be so much easier for me.
That works. Yeah, the end scene of this, even before Blaine, like how it leads up with the scene with Gasher and the TikTok man and Jake, is both brutal and heartrending and also so satisfying. Like, that scene is so satisfying. And then you go into the Blaine scenes where they're so unsure and everything all of a sudden gets flipped around. And now we're back to uncertainty about whether or not they are going to escape. That it's such a good emotional tease for the reader.
I think at the end of it, too, you're sort of just still mainly concerned about Jake because he's the child in this group of people. You know, Roland, Susanna, and Eddie can sort of think things through and think ahead probably more than Jake can. But at the same time, Jake sort of has this unobstructed view on things. He hasn't been jaded like Eddie and Susanna had. And Roland is obviously very mission oriented. So he's even different from Eddie and Susanna. And so at the end, you have these characters who are all in the same situation, but they're all very different and handle things in very different ways. But I just feel like Jake is sort of the one you're like clinging on to this entire time, from when Gasher takes him and then with the TikTok man, and you're like, no, not Jake, please not Jake. And so you're really hoping this book that Jake has of riddles is going to stump Blaine in the future. And obviously, you know, it ends and it's just like, kind of let the games begin. And you're like, wait, what? No, give us more.
Right? You get to the end, you're like, I was not ready for this to be over though, Stephen King. And that's something that a lot of people would say is not a thing often leveled at Stephen King. But yeah, exactly. And Jake is such a sympathetic character, and he's impetuous, and he is such a great creation within this book that I am always so pleased to read about him. And it was such a treat to have him come back in this.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's foreshadowed in the beginning of this and in the drawing of the three, but once he finally gets there, you're like, oh, thank God. Awesome. Now we've got a great character to latch onto. Let's go with it.
Yeah. I think books like this and just the first three books in general are really where Stephen King excels, because to me, this is a lot like The Stand. You have a lot more characters in The Stand, granted, but you have these characters going on a journey, and it's a long journey. So you have to have enough interesting things happen to them along the way to keep you guessing as to what will happen next and to keep you interested in these characters. If Jake was some bratty little kid, you know, we wouldn't care. He's more inquisitive than anything else, and the fact that he seems to want to learn constantly, too, that is something that I think makes his character in particular so interesting. And then you have Roland, who, like I said, is very mission oriented, and he is full of knowledge that he can give out to Eddie, Susanna, and Jake as needed. So he kind of explains things along the way, and Eddie takes on this bigger role, and Susanna is embracing what she's able to do now. So these characters are just so well written that it really propels the story forward, even if it feels like they maybe didn't make all that much progress by the end of the book.
Right. It and at times it does feel that way. But I think it's also, like a lot of these books that King does, it's a very deep story if it doesn't go very long, mm-hmm. which there's a lot that happens in this one. But
yeah,
all of the backstory and world building and all of the things you can see, because obviously the Dark Tower is the center spoke in King's writing universe, we shall say. And you see in this book a lot of the things that come in the other books, like Insomnia or It or whatever. Like there's a lot of tie-ins that happen. And In this book, it's very much the support structure that kind of spreads out. This is the first time we really see Roland talk about what it was like and what the makeup of the universe is and how everything works together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very important book for the structure of the story. And I think that's partially why we don't feel it gets as far as, say, The Gunslinger or The Drawing of the Three, because there's so much detail integrated into the telling of the story.
Yeah. I want to make note of a couple of the towns that they pass through, because they do come across some very interesting people. And the two towns that I want to talk about in particular are River Crossing and Ludd, because Ludd is the city they're learning the history about. And before they head out, Aunt Talitha gives Roland a cross to lay at the bottom, at the base of the Dark Tower when he gets there. And obviously, she's aware that it's going to take a while. So you have these cities, though, that they're either visiting or learning about. And they definitely find some weird people along the way, because River Crossing is in Midworld, and that's where Oi comes from. I don't know if it's necessarily that town, but just Midworld, I mean. And so you have these two groups, the Greys and the Pubes, great names.
I know, right?
And they're just so weird, and you never really care about either group in particular. You're just like, wow, this is an interesting choice. And then you get to Ludd, and you're kind of like, okay, all right, got lots of old people here. That's the thing.
Right. It feels almost like background structure to give us an idea of how old the world is and how decrepit. It's like an actual manifestation of how decrepit the world has become. And like people are born old, it feels like, in this world, because like you said, there are so many old people. And it feels like we never see any large groups of young children. And there's the smaller town feels like a preparation for Ludd, because it's so different than anything we've seen before. And if you've read King's other books that talk about this, like The Eye of the Dragon and such, it's so different from any of those books that it feels very dystopian and post-apocalyptic and all of those delicious things. But then we move to Ludd and it gets so much darker. The small village they visit is one level of dark, and then they go down to Ludd and it's just the base of hell, essentially, is how torn up these people's relationships with each other are. They don't have any sense of community or society. It is all about war and conflict.
Yeah, and it just goes back to the world building that you were talking about. Even though we don't necessarily need to care about a lot of these characters, it gives you context for what this place is like and the various ways that people are living.
Right. Because because so much of the book, when they're moving, like in regards to how much land space they move through, the vast majority of it is so empty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get a whole lot of pages in those times, but that's there's nothing to talk about because all they're doing is traveling. So much of their world, or Roland's world, is empty. And then they come upon these places that are these dark, horrifying pits where people who live there have no hope. Like, they've just bought into the, you know, depressing worldview around them. And it makes you, as a reader, want to find out, is there any place in this constructed world that Stephen King builds where there is hope? On the path to the Dark Tower, will they find anything happy, or will it all be this kind of depressing places?
You almost feel like Roland is the only one who has any hope, especially at the beginning, because he's so focused on what he needs to accomplish. He's like, all right, we'll get there. We'll get there. We do this. We get there. And when Blaine is sort of messing around with them, he puts his foot down and he's like, here's how it's going to be. And he puts their lives on the line, even though he probably has no idea what the outcome is going to be. And obviously, you know, there's what, 8 books now? So clearly they don't die in the next book.
Yeah.
Right. Like, now it's obvious for us because we know how many books there are.
Right. Well, and obviously he's a gambler. He knows when he's got a strong hand and he has a strong quartet behind him, and he's going to go for it because that's the only way through to survival and the only way to take the next step on the road to the Dark Tower. And he has this fatalistic hope of like, well, I have to make it because that's the only way I can achieve my goal. If it costs me everything, I'm going to achieve my goal.
Yeah, it's just really fascinating how Stephen King was able to bring all these different personalities together. And, you know, I don't know if I have too much more to say about this book. I've really enjoyed the experience of reading it. But is there anything you can think of in specific that you want to talk about? I know it's been a little longer since you've read it.
No, I don't think so. I think we covered everything. But I will say, this is a great read. This is one of the books that for me is my favorite of The Dark Tower. I've read it a couple times, and it's always, when I'm doing my reread, I'm always very excited to get to this one. So it's because it's so complicated and it's so complex and it's so well crafted that it is one of the more impressive of Stephen King's books. And that's saying a lot because I'm on this podcast a lot. So obviously.
Which I thank you greatly for.
Yeah, and I love being on here. Which obviously I have a lot of respect for Stephen King. And I think this one is one of his best.
Yeah, and I really feel like that I won't fully understand a lot of what's going on in this series until I hit the end of it. And obviously you know the objective. But it feels like to me there's a lot of foreshadowing going on. But until you get to the next book or 2 books, you're kind of like, okay, what does this mean? What are we doing here? And then I think it'll all click once this wraps up, hopefully. Like I said, I haven't read it all. And I know endings can be a little difficult sometimes with Stephen King because you're like, huh. Or you're like, this was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, it's one or the other. That's how he rolls. Yeah, it's a series that I think you should do a retrospective of, like, okay, now we've read all of them. What do we think of it as a piece? Because it's such a big piece of pop culture. And they're having the new, it's HBO or Showtime that's doing the new Wizards in Glass show.
Amazon.
That looks, I Amazon. Think. Oh, of course, the one I left out. Yes, Amazon doing the new Wizards in Glass show, which will be interesting. It hopefully will be better than the Dark Tower movie.
Which I still have not seen.
Oh, it's so bad.
I have to get to it eventually, but not anytime soon.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I had high hopes, but they were dashed upon the rocks of reality.
I think that's how a lot of people felt about it. So that's why I'm not in a hurry.
Yep, you're like, well, that'll come when it comes.
Yeah, but I'm definitely excited to see what comes next. Like I said, it'll be a little while before I get to Wizard in Glass, but hopefully it won't take me too long. You know, you and I will be discussing Needful Things next week. You're going to be the first person to be on 3 weeks in a row here, I think, Katie.
Whoa! I'm a trendsetter?
Yes. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to end up on 3 times in a row again later, but we'll see what happens. It's a very long spreadsheet to have going.
It means that I get to do more Stephen King, which always makes me happy.
Yes, exactly. Well, thank you for coming on to talk about it today. Before we go, though, I want to quickly let you all know about our Patreon. For $1 a month, you can get a shout out on the show. For $2 a month, you can get a Chat Cemetery sticker. There will be a link in the show notes for that. And you can follow the podcast at Chat Cemetery on Twitter and Instagram. Katie, again, thank you so much for coming on to talk about this. Always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for having me, and I hope everyone enjoyed.
Same here, and as always, thank you all for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.